You're listening to On Attachment, a place to learn about how attachment shapes the way we experience relationships and where you'll gain the guidance, knowledge, and practical tools to overcome insecurity and build healthy, thriving relationships. I'm your host, relationship coach Stephanie Rigg, and I'm really glad you're here. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of On Attachment. In today's episode, we are talking about 20 traits of the anxious attachment style. Now, this is almost a throwback because one of the first ever episodes I did almost 2 years ago was 5 traits of the anxious attachment style. And I haven't really done anything so foundational about anxious attachment since then. Obviously, there's been a lot of other episodes about, you know, various aspects of the anxious attachment experience. But I thought to revisit this for anyone who is a new listener or anyone who is wondering whether anxious attachment is really them, or maybe you know that anxious attachment is very much your experience, but you're interested to know some of the less obvious expressions of that attachment style and pattern. So 20 traits of the anxious attachment style is what we're going to be talking about today. I've actually decided to split this across 2 episodes because I think I'll ramble on for far too long if I'm trying to cover 20 in one episode. So this is part 1 of 20 traits of the anxious attachment style, and part 2 will follow in a couple of days' time. So before we dive into today's episode, a quick reminder that Healing Anxious Attachment, which is my signature program, is relaunching in less than a week's time for the 7th round, which is pretty amazing. I first launched it 2 years ago, almost to the day actually, and it has really grown into something greater than what I could ever have imagined since that first launch. Over 1,500 students have been through this program, and it really is not only tried and tested, but received such beautiful feedback, and it's something that I've poured, you know, so much of myself into, trying to distill down everything that I've learned and everything that I have been teaching to people around anxious attachment and the journey to becoming more secure within yourself and within your relationship. So it's a very comprehensive program. I would love to see you in there. It's the last round that I'm going to be running before I head off on maternity leave. So if you are interested in joining when doors open next week, you can jump on the wait list. Being on the wait list means that you get exclusive access to early bird pricing and also exclusive bonuses. So it's definitely worth doing, even if you don't end up joining. Give yourself the option if you're at all interested, and you can do that via the link in the show notes. Okay, so let's dive into these first 10 of 20 traits of the anxious attachment style. Now, I should say these are, you know, I sat down to prepare for this, to write this out, and it's very much off the top of my head. So this is not an exhaustive list. It's not a textbook list. These are things that I'm pulling from not only my own experience, but obviously having worked with so many thousands of people on this and hearing so many other people's stories, I know that these traits that I'm about to share are almost universal among those with anxious attachment patterns. So, you know, in no particular order am I sharing these. It's not exhaustive. If you don't relate to every single one, that doesn't mean anything much. I'm really just sharing these for the purposes of cultivating insight and self-awareness. Okay. So the first one is your sense of worth and well-being is tethered to the status of your relationship. So for anxiously attached people, there can be this sense of, you know, my identity, my sense of being okay or not in the world is directly reflective of how I'm feeling about my relationship or what's going on there. So if things feel okay with us, then I feel okay. If things feel anything other than okay with us, I'm probably going to be, you know, a mess. I'm going to be really consumed by whatever I perceive to be the problems in my relationship. So there is this sense of like inextricable link between how I feel about life, about myself, and how I'm feeling about you and our relationship. And it can be very, very hard to separate those things because the relationship is so fundamental, so essential to our, not only our identity, but our sense of safety. So that first one, your sense of worth and well-being is tethered to the status of your relationship. And I should say as a little footnote to that, it often means that, you know, your particularly vulnerable or susceptible to disturbance when things aren't perfect in your relationship. So, you know, whereas even secure people obviously are affected by what's going on in their relationship, it's not a purely anxious attachment trait to be, you know, bothered or saddened by things not feeling great in your relationship. For anxiously attached people, it's kind of any and every bump in the road feels disproportionately distressing. And it's very hard to compartmentalize or delineate between different areas of life. You know, if the relationship's bad, everything's bad. Okay, the next one is you struggle with separation anxiety and you catastrophize if you can't reach your partner. So physical proximity and connection tends to be very reassuring for anxiously attached people. There can be this sense of, you know, if you're right here and next to me and I can see you and I can feel you, then I know that everything's okay. But as soon as I lose that, you know, having you next to me and knowing that little bit of uncertainty, that little bit of distance, that little bit of unknown, all of my anxiety fills that space. And I can go very quickly into feeling insecure, and particularly so if I can't reach you. So it might be one thing if, you know, your partner goes to the shops or, you know, goes to work or whatever, and you know where they are, that might be okay. That might not be so triggering for you. But if you then call them and they don't answer, and then maybe you call a second time and they don't answer, it's likely that you're going to go very quickly to a worst case scenario of either they're hiding something from me, they're avoiding me, or something terrible has happened to them. So we can recognize that separation anxiety is a big piece for anxious attachment. And that particularly in circumstances where you are unable to reach them or you feel like you can't reach them, that's likely to very quickly activate you, send you into dysregulation. And, you know, a lot of kind of anxious thoughts and feelings and behaviors are likely to flow from that place. Okay, the next one is you struggle to believe that your partner really loves and values you. So this is really sad, really, when we think about it. But anxiously attached people do tend to harbor fairly low self-worth. And so I can really struggle to feel an intrinsic sense of value, a sense that, yeah, I believe that my partner loves me. I believe that my partner cares about me. I believe that they see my value. When we don't see that for ourselves, it's very hard to believe that our partner sees that in us. And, you know, that's why such a big piece of the healing work for anxious attachment is building up our sense of self-worth so that we don't put our partners on a pedestal and put ourselves, you know, down very low relative to them, because that tends to, I think, both be fueled by the fear of abandonment, but also in turn add fuel to that fire, because we think that we are, you know, lacking in value or worth, then we are much more likely to fear abandonment, because we don't see why our partner would want to be with us. And that can lead to a whole host of other behaviors, thoughts, insecurities, as you can imagine, when we don't really trust that our partner wants to be with us and really does value us in the relationship. Okay, number four is kind of related to number three, which is you feel easily threatened by others and compare yourself to others. So here we're talking about jealousy, outside threats to the relationship, and comparison, really, really common among people with anxious attachment. And again, it's related to that same seed of low self-worth, this sense of if I don't really see my value, then I'm very easily threatened by any and everyone or thing outside of the relationship that I perceive as potentially taking you away from me or competing with me in some way. So there can be an almost obsessive tendency to compare ourselves, to scrutinize, to be on the lookout for danger, so to speak. You know, that might be colleagues or exes or friends of your partner. You see them all as very threatening and you know, go through comparisons of how you stack up relative to them. And that might feel like something that you have to do, or you might have to, you know, change yourself, improve yourself relative to them, try and emulate them so that you feel less threatened by them. You feel like they're less likely to, you know, pose a threat to the relationship, to take your partner away from you, that your partner's going to, you know, fall in love with them and leave you. So we can see those same, you know, threads of fear of abandonment and jealousy and low self-worth are all interwoven into that one as well. Okay, the next one is you have a hard time with needs and boundaries. So anxiously attached people tend to struggle with needs and boundaries almost at every step of the way. So knowing what their needs and boundaries are, so actually identifying that, oftentimes we're so divorced from our own needs, our own boundaries, we just have learned to not really have needs or boundaries, or, you know, have kind of numbed ourselves to those because we're so accustomed to, you know, going with other people's needs or boundaries, deferring to other people's needs and boundaries and comfort and happiness, that we've actually convinced ourselves that we don't have any needs or boundaries outside of our partners. For example, you know, if they're happy, I'm happy. As long as their needs are taken care of and everything seems fine, then that's all I need. Of course, that's not true, but it can feel really true. And it can mean that we have a hard time actually knowing what our needs are separate from the needs of our partner. So there's this process of, you know, figuring out what our needs and boundaries are. What am I comfortable with? What do I need? What's important to me in a relationship? The next one, next step being kind of voicing those needs and boundaries to a partner, which can be really intimidating. Again, that fear of abandonment, fear of being too much, fear of I'm not worthy or deserving of having needs. And I'm worried that if I take up too much space or if I voice a need, then I'll be perceived as difficult. And someone will leave me. All of those things can really challenge us when it comes to actually taking that step of voicing our needs and boundaries. And then I think the third piece here is following through on advocating for those needs and boundaries on an ongoing basis or in the face of pushback. So one of the things that I hear from people all the time is that they judge themselves very harshly and they feel a lot of shame about not upholding their boundaries. So they might, you know, state a boundary or they might voice something, advocate for themselves. But when it comes down to it, if that need or that boundary is in competition with the relationship or the connection, then the connection will win out and they'll kind of collapse on their boundary just to hold on to the relationship. And, you know, that process of actually holding firm on something that you say is really vitally important to you in a relationship is, you know, a big part of the growth as well and can be very challenging for many, most, I would say, anxiously attached people. Okay, the next one is you have a tendency to overstay in relationships that aren't working. Now, I will put my hand up and say that I have been guilty of this more than once in my life, but it is a really, really common experience with anxious attachment, again, because the primacy of connection is so, you know, it's so paramount to you, to your sense of identity, safety, you know, just feeling okay in the world. It can be such a foreign concept to walk away from a relationship, even a relationship that's like clearly dysfunctional, not working, where you're not happy or your needs are not being met. You know, I often sort of jokingly say that for anxiously attached people, you could spend like, you know, months or even years telling your partner how unhappy you are. But the idea of actually leaving seems, you know, like the absolute last resort. For anxiously attached people, the urge is, you know, I complain about the relationship. I lament all of the things that are missing, but I do that because I want to change it from the inside rather than walking away. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think that willingness to work on a relationship can be a really beautiful sign of commitment. But I think it has its shadow side, which is, you know, perhaps overstaying when the right thing to do might be to walk away, when we're really not getting anywhere, when we really are not happy or fulfilled. And I think overstaying when the writing's on the wall, because we're too afraid of, you know, stepping out into the void of being separate from that relationship. I think that can be one of the big struggles of people with anxious attachment. The next one, which is number 7 for anyone who's keeping count, you have a savior complex and are drawn to people who need fixing. So many anxiously attached people have, I would say, yeah, a heightened sense of emotional attunement and are really good at, you know, being empathically connected to others and really understanding people's pain, which is, you know, such a beautiful trait. It really is. I think it's what makes anxiously attached people great friends and great partners. It's probably what makes me good at my job, being able to see people and understand them and really tune into their feelings. The the underbelly of this, we might say, the shadow side, can show up as this savior complex, this sense of, because I feel like that's a way I can show value or be valuable, you know, to support you emotionally, to see your pain, to hold your pain, that I gravitate towards people who I see as needing saving, helping, or fixing. So can often find yourself dating someone with, you know, a lot of unresolved issues, or who, you know, has a lot of pain. And again, that's not to say that, you know, you shouldn't date people like that. I think we all have our stuff, our baggage that we're all working through. But I do think we need to be mindful of the extent to which we are taking someone on as a project and we are making it our mission to change them, and, you know, how that might be tied up with our own sense of worth, this sense of, you know, they'll change for me. They've been this way in the past. They've always struggled with this thing. But once I, you know, am able to show them my love and care for them and support them, that's going to be the thing that, you know, triggers their metamorphosis into something else. And I think that that can be coming from a place within us of low self-worth, again, common thread, and of feeling like, you know, if I can do that, then I will have really proved myself. And like, then I'll know that I'm valuable, that I'm worthy, and this person won't leave me because they'll be so indebted to me for having saved them. So, you know, as I said, while there's some beautiful things in there and, you know, wanting to support someone's growth, beautiful, wanting to support someone's healing, great. Taking it upon yourself to be someone's like coach or therapist or savior, not so great, and can get us stuck in some pretty imbalanced dynamics. So the savior complex is one to look out for. Okay, number eight is you don't really know who you are outside of a relationship. So again, we've touched on this sense of my whole identity is handed over to the relationship. Everything that I do, everything that I like or dislike, my preferences, my hobbies, the way that I spend my time, I kind of give over all of myself to the relationship. And so the idea of being outside of a relationship, being single, or the relationship ending, is very daunting to me because I've not got a clear sense of who I am if I'm not, you know, part of this unit. And so I think a really big part of the growth for anxiously attached people for that reason is actually diversifying their time and energy away from the relationship. Not to an extreme degree. Obviously, it's perfectly fine and normal to want to, you know, do things with your partner and have shared experiences. But when we put all of our eggs in that basket, we tend to, again, have a bit of an imbalance, and it makes us really vulnerable to, you know, what our first point was, which is if anything feels like it's off in the relationship, then our whole life feels like it's crumbling because our whole life sits in that bucket of the relationship. Whereas if we've got, you know, more things propping up our life, more like legs propping up the table, then it's likely to be less vulnerable and wobbly, and we're likely to have more of a sense of resilience. Okay, number nine is you tend towards overgiving and excessive self-sacrifice. So most anxiously attached people are givers, right? And as much as we can complain, I think this is one of the ones where we have to be like so brutally honest with ourselves, about ourselves, and I'll be the first to put my hand up. We can complain that like, oh, I'm always the one giving or thinking about you or caring for you or supporting you, and yet we're not very good at asking for support or receiving it when it is given to us, because I think receiving is actually a very, very vulnerable thing to do, particularly when you are accustomed to being the giver. So there can be this sense of giving and giving and giving, either to make ourselves, you know, again, more valuable, more indispensable to someone. If I take care of you, if I attend to all of your needs, you know, if I do everything for you, then you won't want to live without me because I make your life so much easier. And if you don't want to live without me, then I'm not going to lose you. So there can be some comfort derived from that dynamic, even when we might complain about that dynamic and, you know, the lack of reciprocity that exists there. So being mindful of that, and if you notice that within yourself, again, like there's pieces to it. It's, do I need to pull back on my giving, and do I need to practice like asking and receiving so that it feels like there's more mutuality and reciprocity in the relationship? Okay. And number 10 is you require a lot of reassurance from your partner, but you struggle to believe it. So anxiously attached people can often try and manage their fears and insecurities by seeking, you know, very regular ongoing reassurance from their partner. And while, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with seeking reassurance from time to time, there can be a sense of like, there'll never be enough reassurance to really soothe that wound. If you're expecting your partner to make it all okay, you know, if every time you're feeling insecure, every time you're feeling anxious, you're relying on your partner to make that feeling go away, and needing them to kind of talk you off the ledge. I don't know about you, but in my experience, that tends to be a very, very temporary fix. And you know, doesn't actually get to the heart of what is causing that insecurity to come up again and again and again. So while it can be a really beautiful thing in a relationship for a partner to, you know, participate in your healing by giving that reassurance, we do have to be mindful of our expectations around that and what we're hoping our partner is going to be able to do for us and what their role is in our growth and healing. In terms of convincing us that everything's okay and that they love us, even though, you know, nothing's really happened. We've just got these ongoing fears that are really rampant within us. So finding the balance there between, you know, what's my work to do? What's my stuff to tend to? And what's a kind of reasonable and healthy role for my partner to play in that is a big part of the work as well. Okay, so that was points 1 to 10. I'm going to pause there. And as I said, we'll have part 2, which is points 11 to 20, traits of the anxious attachment style. I'm going to release that in a couple of days' time. So I hope that you really enjoyed this. I hope that it's, you know, dug a little deeper than just the, you know, typical listicles that you might see around traits of the anxious attachment style, giving a little more insight into like what sits underneath those and what drives them. And as I said, if you resonate with some or most of these, or maybe all of them, definitely jump on the wait list for Healing Anxious Attachment. I would love to be able to support you as you work on these things, as you do some unlearning and some relearning of new ways. So definitely jump on the waitlist if you're interested. Otherwise, thank you so much for joining me, and I look forward to seeing you again in a few days' time with part 2. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for joining me for this episode of On Attachment. If you want to go deeper on all things attachment, love, and relationships, you can find me on Instagram at Stephanie_Rigg or at stephanierigg.com. And if you enjoyed this episode, I'd be so grateful if you could leave a review and a 5-star rating. It really does help so much. Thanks again for being here, and I hope to see you again soon.